Hello, everybody. It's Gary Stuckey here, ready for another exciting interview today on Real Music. I've got a great singer, an international singer. Her name is Tammy. You know, that one-word title? You know, you think of Madonna, or Reba, or Shania, Mariah. This is Tammy, and she's got a great story to tell. She started off in country music. She ended up doing jazz and blues, and she does it all. And she's been traveling all over the world. She's got an awesome story to tell you. And she's a survivor. And this story is going to inspire you. But a number 11 Billboard charting song called The Sugar Shack. Yeah, it's a really awesome song. You need to check it out. And all of her music is awesome. She's got a great voice. And you're going to enjoy this story and this interview. And I think it will inspire you. So here we go. Here's Tammy.
Hello, this is Gary.
Hey, Gary, it's Tammy.
Hello, Tammy. How are you doing?
I'm well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. So, Yay. So is it just Tammy or is it Tammy Jones or?
I just really go by Tammy right now. We're my team and are kind of thinking of like what last name I should use, but I not that I have so many, but I started out as Tammy Jones in the country music industry, and I'm married since, and I think at one point they just thought, oh, just go by a single name because I spell my name differently than most Tammy. Just go by, you know.
Right.
But how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing real good.
Good.
That's a cool story you got there. It sounds like, it sounds like one of those stories that needs to be like a movie. Don't you think this could be a good movie? Because there's a lot going on.
Well, you know, I've lived it. So, yeah, it's got its highlights.
So sure. Who would you get to play you in a movie?
Oh, gosh. What a good question. I don't know. Maybe let's just pick Jessica Chastain because I she was on an interview with someone and she played Tammy Faye Baker.
Okay. Yeah.
And she's also playing Tammy Wynette. So, you know, why not?
Yeah.
She's a great actress.
Well, she's got the Tammy thing going on. So there you go. Yeah. Oh, okay, so I'm reading your bio, and I'm trying to figure out where do I begin? You know, you've got this. You could just tell this long story. Maybe I should just let you tell this long story. But I think it's like the summary though is you moved to Nashville. You're going to sing country music. You got a deal with Sony, and then things changed. Right? You did a bunch of other things and traveling and doing other kinds of music and. All kinds of cool stuff, right? But some ups and downs and all that, right? So,
I always tell people, everybody wants a blueprint or a book on like what to do in the music business. I mean, I get asked that question quite a bit, and I tell everyone has their own passage, their own chapter, and their own way to do it. And I guess I am the poster child for that because
right. Hey, I mean, they can't go by your blueprint because it's like a snowflake. Everybody's different, I think. But I think with you, it seems like they'd have to go through all the struggles too to get to where you are. You know, it's just there's different things in your life that you had to face to get to where you are. And sometimes I don't think people want to go down that road, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, there were definitely some chapters in there that were, not quite as uplifting as I had wanted and certainly not what I had envisioned. I mean, I had a little health scare right when I was 27 years old. So I was quite young. And, you know, had to go through that. It was cervical cancer, and it just kind of came on just unexpectedly. And no, I mean, I felt healthy, I felt good, and then all of a sudden, and you know, and then luckily I had a child at that point. I'd had my son Zachlin, already had him, and otherwise, you know, then because you know things change, but right. You know, I think. You know, you don't really feel that at the time, but sometimes things just do make you stronger in time. And right. That's the best I can say. You try to be supportive and lend support to people that are struggling. And, you know, in a way they don't, in a way it's, you don't know really what they're going through. Right. And, you know, when you're trying to comfort people that are either suffering loss or grief or just, you know, mentally having some hard times. And, you know, today in these times with the right. COVID times, it's certainly one of those times where people are having like some, you know, challenges, and you don't want to be placating and say, oh yeah, well, it'll be better.
Right.
You know, life makes you stronger, but in time, I mean, I think it does, but you have to, you know, watch what you say to people because they're going through things at different times. And I always try to be very present about that. Like, I don't want to say the wrong thing when somebody's hurting or going through a challenge. You have to just listen and be supportive. And, but from, you know, from my perspective, things do make you stronger. I mean, that's just my wheelhouse where,
right.
You know,
no, I understand that. I totally understand. I was talking to Kelly Lang about, you know, she had cancer, and you know, when you're younger, which I had a bout with thyroid cancer, but I was 23 years old. So the thing is, when you're younger, and there's nobody usually around in their 20s with cancer that you could talk to and say, hey, is it going to be okay? Who do you run to? Who do you turn to? Right? You could pray. That helps, you know. But sometimes you have to endure whatever you're going through. You have to face it by yourself. And make yourself realize that you're going to be okay. If you know you're going to be okay, you know, right?
Right. And I think, you know, I think it all is just contingent upon where people are in their lives and what support system they have. I was very fortunate. I had my family. I went back to Oklahoma. I was in Nashville at the time. I had just moved here. You know, to be this country music star. And I went back to Oklahoma and my parents helped. You know, help me get this, you know, the surgery that I needed and all of that. And, you know, those are the times where you really have to kind of say, okay, you know, this is what life has, and this is how I'm going to go forward. And I am you know, a lot of people say you have fight or flight.
Right.
And I am a fighter. I do know that about myself now.
That's, like, hey, that's the way to be. That's how you survive, right? You got to fight.
And, yeah. You know, I was just like in my own world, you know, so happy to be in Nashville and so learning so many things. And then, you know, that happened. And then I was just like, okay, well, you just got to move forward. And I, you know, if I'm given an obstacle up to this point, I've been very lucky to just tackle past that obstacle and go forward. And I had support, and support systems are so, so important in times like these. So I don't want to say, oh, it was all me, you know, people that support and lend friendship and advice and encouragement. Sure. Those are the real superstars too.
Right. I totally agree. So you came from Oklahoma to Nashville, you're in your 20s. And so what was your plans as far as making it? You were trying to get a deal. What was going on in your mind when you moved to Nashville?
Well, I was a single mother, so I had that. And I was in a new city. Nashville's quite a bit larger than my hometown, living in Oklahoma. And so I was just trying to learn Nashville as a city and trying to be, you know, learn everything I could. I was still young, but I was juggling and managing, you know, my son, which was 18 months of age. So, and luckily, what I had in my background is that I was a dental assistant in Oklahoma. Okay. So I worked full time and I sang demos at night.
Wow.
And took care of my child. And I usually would bring him to the studio with me. Luckily, the the songwriters were so nice, and they would say, "Oh, okay." And I promise, you know, I'd say, "I promise he's a great child," which he was and is. And so I kind of tugged him along if I couldn't get a sitter, and I didn't want to leave him with a sitter all the time. So, you know, I was very present about that, and just, you just learn. And the thing that I learned about Nashville that you probably will probably know and be very happy to hear also, I'm sure you know this, but Nashville is a songwriter's town. Right. And I learned that pretty quickly, because you go in and you think, oh, you're a singer. And I don't think you really think about, like, why this is such a music town. And it starts with the publishing and the songwriters. Right. So I was able to learn that, and I started doing demos with a lot of songwriters in Nashville. And I happened to do, somebody had given me a contact over at BMI, which is a licensing company, one of the big greats, broadcast music. And I went to have a meeting with Harry Warner, and Harry Warner said, you know, well, I had a demo tape in my pocket, and he said, you know, there's some people I can introduce you to. And he introduced me to Lewis Anderson and Mark Wright. And then that kind of, I started doing demos for them. And then I met Bobby Braddock. Right. And then I did some demos for Dean Dillon, who just is awesome. Amazing too.
Yeah. George Strait. And, yeah. Great, great, great writer there.
Yeah. And so from that, I was able to meet all of the, not all, but the, be around, you know, the really, really great writers in town. And that, and then you learn, okay, this is what this town is about. And if I want to do this career that I'm doing, I'm really going to have to learn about songs.
Right.
And that's what I did. And I took it very seriously. I was around the publishing houses a lot, and you know, would go through songs and material. And then I met Bobby. He started really kind of just teaching me, you know, the ways of the world within the studio, you know, going into the studio. He'd take me into Sony Tree and we would do demos, and it was a wonderful experience as far as, watching him work.
Yeah.
And learning, you know, how a session is run, and, the unbelievable musicianship that is, you know, that is here, and, right. And how they all work together. And it's a beautiful scene, but you know, you kind of, I didn't expect it. I just thought, okay, I'm going to go pass my tape around. And I did sing out live. I didn't know where to begin. And I started singing like on the street, and I got a job at Gilly's, you know, remember Gilly's?
Yeah.
Like in,
right.
Mickey
Gilly's place, yeah.
Right. He had a place here in Nashville, yeah. as well as Texas, and
that's cool.
They hired me, and I started singing demo songs out there, and you know, and then I would sing different local shows, and people would come and see me. But it all kind of began with, I mean, I really felt like I had my strong footing when you start doing demos with songwriters and work within the community as a collective.
Right. Yeah, you had it all around you. You know, it's like you're just right in the middle of all this talent, which I'm sure, you know, helped you out. And, wow, a lot of great names there. And so tell me this, though, as I was reading. So you get this deal with Sony, and then they kind of put it on the shelf, right? So what happened there?
Yeah, that was... I think that particular happenstance, I had worked very hard at that point just to try to meet everybody I could. And Bobby, along with a producer named Paul Worley, had taken me into Sony, and we had a deal going, and we were in the middle of cutting, I think, 10 songs, and I think we had 8 finished. And there was some sort of... corporate change, which happens apparently, right. You know, when you're young, you don't think about those things, but apparently it happens quite often where like there'll be a new label head. And especially during that era,
yeah,
of country music, there seemed like there was a lot of corporate changeovers where somebody went from New York or wherever the parent company was would say, okay, no, you've got a new CEO or you've got a new president, and then, you know, and I was in that particular place where, my album hadn't come out yet. there was no promotion done yet. And they said, okay, well, we've got a new person here. So, and we're going to start over. So a lot of, not only me, but there were other people that were shelved at that moment.
Yeah.
And you know, that was so disappointing to me because I had worked really, really hard just to get to that point. Yeah, and, we had great material and, you know, it just, it changed my life because I was so distraught by that. And I had worked already so many years and had gone through so much already that I was thinking, wow, is this worth it? Do I really want to do this? I mean, I knew I was always going to sing, but you know, I really had to kind of think about what I needed to do to rewind and how to take my second approach. And I, my father was a, he grew up in Texas, but he was always a music lover and, Oklahoma. And he taught me jazz and blues, and he has a massive record collection, which he shared with me. And we just would listen to all of the greats, as I was growing up. And at that moment when I had lost my country deal, I decided that I was going to try and go back to the source of me, which was blues and soul and jazz.
Awesome. Wow. So, and I guess that's in your mind though. So obviously you don't take defeat. You don't sit back and let it stop you, because going through the cancer, going through your single mom, and then this, it's a, you just go to plan B, right? Is that like the way of thinking? You go, I'm going to do this now. Is that just automatic?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't as like short and blunt as that. Like, oh, I'm just going to change directions. I mean, and sometimes you have to in life. Yeah. I mean, you do, but I took several months to try to figure out like what I wanted to do and what I wanted to be, because I mean, I still had contacts in the business and, you know, everybody was being very kind at that point. It's like, sorry, you know, that's terrible. But there were other people going through it. I mean, you know, the music business is one of those things where it's just is a revolving, rotating thing. And, sometimes it can happen super fast. Things happen really, really fast. And sometimes things take forever. So at that point, I knew it was just like a pivotal moment for me, because I was like, oh, we need to go on, and I need to go on, and I need to like really discover myself. And one of the words of wisdom that you get along the way to me was always be yourself.
Right.
And you have to have an identifying thing about your voice. You know, they implemented that into me a lot, where like singers that are really unique sounding, they want that. They want unique sounding things, because hey, there's already a Reba McEntire. We don't need to.
Right.
And so I took that to heart, and I knew that. So I really put a lot of time into that. Like, how do I get back to me? And here I am in Nashville, Tennessee, which is country music, you know, capital of the world, and having this dilemma, sort of like, well, I want to sing jazz and blues and soul because that's really what I'm good at. Bobby at times would say, you've got some soul in your voice. I mean, you're really kind of soulful. And that being with what my dad had instilled in me, I wanted to go and try that. So I found an R&B cover band here in Nashville and started singing. I mean, this is old school R&B cover band.
Oh, wow.
And we started singing just old school stuff. And I learned so much from that. LC Scruggs, I'll never forget him. He had a band, and we went out and we did gigs around Nashville, and we were singing just all the great things, you know, all the great old school things. So,
wow.
You know, like Etta James and all of that. And that made me, those two things, the record deal at Sony and me singing in the R&B band, put me on the right path.
Right.
It put me in the right direction to go in the direction I needed to go. And some, you know, not everybody's life is like mine, and I know that, and everybody has their own way, but sometimes when life steers you in a direction, you have to kind of listen to it. You have to say, okay, well, this seems like to be the thing that's going to work for me.
I was just thinking about that. It's kind of like going down a path or going down the road. If the road starts to curve, you got to turn your wheel with the curve, or you'll go off the road and crash. So it's kind of like life. You got to go with the curve, and then you eventually it'll come back straight and everything works out. So what was the next part of your life? So when you figured out, hey, I'm going to do some jazz, I'm going to do some other soul type stuff. What'd you do after that?
Well, I sang in, some blues clubs and dives in Nashville and just some really good music places that we got some really good, you know, musical moments, and I learned so much. And then for me, the surprise chapter, I always have these surprise chapters, but, surprise chapter of my husband had received an offer to teach business at a university in China. Wow. It was he was going to be a professor there. He's very smart and very talented, and that's his background. But he just said, "What do you think?" And I'm like, "Whoa, you know, that's a lot. I'm just now kind of getting my footing with my career." And then we thought about it, and I thought, "Why not? I'm already on this spin. I mean, I've already why not? Let's go check out the music scene over in Asia."
Yeah.
And that was like the third pivotal thing in my life. And one of the most important musical parts of my life is to experience music in other parts of the world. So that was like the final thing that was like, yeah, this is landed my direction.
So how did you adapt to life in China and music and all that?
It was crazy.
it's not like Nashville, is it?
Oh, no. In fact, we were in a small city, or not a small city. They call it like a medium tier city in China. It was 12 million people. Oh, and wow. that's not the larger cities. Other being on the other side of the world, and the cultures are completely different than our own, than what you're used to. I discovered that they had a wonderful jazz scene and really proficient, really fantastic musicians that, you know, stringed instruments that were just beyond like anything I can imagine of how great of, talented musicians there are. And so I started singing jazz in China.
That's cool. And I guess it makes you stand out a little bit. I guess if you're a country girl and you go to China and you're singing jazz, you kind of get noticed, right?
Well, I guess I was in the right place at the right time. It seemed to be a novelty thing at first. And then I just started gathering more and more, followers, which I'm very thankful for. And it just kind of became a thing. And, here's this American girl in China that's, singing jazz, and I was singing in the most opulent, beautiful places, jazz rooms, and over there, the history of that is since 1987, they hadn't had live music or jazz or the jazz genre in their lives because it was outlawed until 1987.
Wow.
And so the jazz rooms were packed. They were packed. People would come in, and it was very young culture, young crowd that, were discovering music, and enthusiasts were there, and, just would come into these places. And I, like, one of my most favorite rooms was I played at the Last Emperor's Hotel, which he was the last emperor of China, and he was a music enthusiast. He had this beautiful hotel, which his family owns or something, that he would stay at frequently. And it was just the people would just come in droves, and it was just wonderful.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm sure there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people over there. I'm sure they all showed up and enjoyed it. Yeah, you got, man, just thinking about it, just cool, really cool.
But so there, therefore I began the love of, international, to me, the most important message I got out of that is like, American and English music are transcendent. People thirst to hear that. They want to know what our life is like. So I almost felt like I was bringing a little bit of America to them, that they could get a piece of something that they were not you know, they weren't able to experience. And so I felt proud for that fact of singing all these, you know, Otis Redding songs and things like that, that it was just really, really an incredible. And the people were so kind, and so thrilled to have it. You know, I felt their appreciation very much. So it was a wonderful, wonderful time.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, man. That's like I said, that's an adventure in itself. And then you get to do that, and it's not really like a competition thing, like in, you know, Nashville or something like that, or you've got all these artists, you know, doing the same thing. You're kind of a different world. So I guess it's kind of cool to get that opportunity. So, so what happened after that? How did you get back? How did you come full circle into back to the music, and recording and things like that?
Well, the visas in China are very strict. I mean, they are very stringent on, like, you can come at this time and you can go at this time, and you cannot extend your visas, unless China, you know, specifically wants you to stay. And, we had been there for 2 full years and, had been traveling all of Asia and Southeast Asia because my husband would get these holiday breaks. And so we would go and travel around Asia for the breaks when I wasn't singing and he was on break. We would go and explore, and we found that we really loved Thailand. It's a country south of China, it's Southeast Asia, and I would go there to get warm too, because China's very cold in the winter, extremely frigid cold. I think they had the ice festival in Harbin, China, and you know, I mean, they build castles out of ice. I mean, it's just extremely, extremely cold in the winter. So we would go for a break for, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks and go down to Thailand and Cambodia and Korea. Korea's over the other side, but Vietnam. So we would travel and go around, and we fell in love with Thailand. Thailand is this beautiful tropical island country, and the people are so extremely wonderful. And we started going down there, and we went to a club on this little island called Koh Chang, which is like one of these paradise islands that we wanted to visit. And somebody said, you got to go down and check this place called Udi's Place in Koh Chang. It's got great, great blues. Mm-hmm. So we went down there, and I was just blown away by the musicianship. And to fast forward, I became great friends with the owner, and I started singing blues there. After our visa was over, we just packed our bags and we didn't come back home. And we just said, let's just go live in Thailand for a while. Let's just check it out, because the music it's so open. I can't really explain how open music is over in Asia. It's very open, different in a different way than, you know, America has all of these strict license policies, which is good because that protects the songwriters, but also it's just open. People are playing music all the time, and it's very easy to play, and it's, everybody's enjoying it. And it's just it's a lovely accoutrement of Asia where you can hear music from all different kinds of, and people travel to play music. Like, I've met people from France and Germany and every European country and Africa and India. Wow. I mean, it's just really open. People travel there a lot, and they come there to play. So I get to meet more of an international crowd and get to experience musicianship from a lot of different folks. And so it was really wonderful.
Yeah.
I started singing blues after we kind of temporarily moved there for a while. I started singing blues at this club that we fell in love with, and we had big crowds. And in one of the crowds, we got to know some people from Bavaria. It's the southern part of Germany, and they were really interested in what we were doing, and we became good friends with them. And one night after a show, we sat down at a table, and Udi and myself and my husband and Manfred and Lisa, we sat down and we said, let's just make a blues album. And it happened exactly like that. I don't know.
just happened like just like that. Yeah.
It just happened like that. We were laughing and talking about it, and they were like, let's just make an album. And that's what happened. So I called my friend Bobby in Nashville and called him. It was 12 hours difference in time. I called him and I said, what do you think about this? He said, well, I'd love to produce it. And I was so fortunate that he wanted to step in like that.
Wow. And that it's cool that after time had passed, he was still interested so how big of a step was it for you to change up the music as far as going from country to blues and things like that? Was it too far out of your comfort zone, so to speak, or you just realized what you wanted to do? Did you ever think I want to stay in this area, or you want to kind of do it all? What kind of music?
Well, after China, I had no expectations about anything. I mean, you know, after that, you're kind of like going, okay, my life is a roller coaster and I'm just going to ride it. We did talk about the type of music we wanted to create. And I and Bobby really was instrumental on that. He was like, well, you love the blues and you sing it so well, and you love jazz and you sing it so well, and you've got a little bit of country in there and you sing it so well. Let's just try to gather some songs that are multi-genred. And at that point, we really went to work. He would be sending me songs, and his assistant and my assistant on the album would send songs over every day, and he'd send them to me at night, and I'd wake up the next day while he was sleeping, and I would be going through the songs. And we went through many, many songs, and we just kind of came up with an album that was Bobby puts it as a compendium of the blues, where it touches every part of the blues somehow.
Cool.
Even though it's different, you know, different genres. There's rock blues, there's disco blues, there's old school blues, there's you know, all sorts of stuff, jazz blues.
It's like the root of every, you know, everything that we love. You know, blues is right in the middle of it all, you know. I mean, that's just how it is. That's just part of all the music, I think. It's like the center.
I really love singing the blues. I mean, it does make you feel better. And it's one of those genres that are it's so fantastic. I mean, they call it the blues. I mean, it talks about a lot of sad things, but at the same time, while you're hearing these sad lyrics, you're feeling better.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, one of those things. It's like, wow, it's amazing. But,
it's relatable. I mean, a lot of people can relate to the blues, and then the music just really kind of touches your soul. And it's like, yeah, I want to listen to this. It's very listenable. I mean, it does make you feel better for sure.
And you know, music heals. Music is a healer. So that's, you know, tried and true, where you can play the blues and heal. You know, sometimes you can feel healed by it. And I just found it to be a genre that I really love to sing.
Yeah, I love it too. I really do. So the album was Velvet and Steel, right? Was it?
Right.
The name. And then, so tell me about the single, The Sugar Shack. I mean, not talking about the old school Sugar Shack, you know, that one, but this one. Now, this was on the Billboard charts, right? This is like a dance song. So tell me about that.
Yeah, well, like we recorded 13 songs, and Bobby carefully, you know, planned it out where every track would kind of lend itself to the next track. And he was so particular about that, and brilliant to put that together the way we, you know, came up with the songs. And he said, I want to do it this way. I want to put them like in order, in this particular order, because I feel like it's going to, it will show the story. So he, you know, he put that all together, just brilliantly arranged, and the musicians were brilliantly arranged. And one of the songs that we had pitched to us was by a great songwriter here in Nashville and throughout the world. His name is James House. Cool. And his co-writer on this song was Beth Hart. You know, Beth Hart, the great vocalist, the blues. And I just heard this song, and originally in the demo form, Beth was singing the demo, great voice, but it was more of a blues thing. definitely deep down blues, and it sounded like almost like a chain gang type of thing. It had this really cool percussion thing going on, and I loved it, and Bobby loved it. And he said, but then later he came back to me and he wrote me an email and he said, you know what, I want to change that to a disco. And I about fell out because I was like, what?
What are you doing?
A disco. He's like, trust me. I want to turn this into like this disco sounding thing. And sure enough, we had musicians in and they played it perfectly. And it became like, this disco. And he said, disco is a form of the blues that came out of, the dance, R&B.
Right.
And eventually it morphed into the disco. So we put it on there. And my team that I was working with at the time, they were like, we love the Sugar Shack. We think we can do something with this. So they took it and ran. And before we knew it, we were just, to my surprise and to my complete surprise, because the album has 13 songs on it and we were not. It could go in many different directions. Yeah. I mean, Bobby wrote the title track for it, A Strong Woman. He wrote that, and we have a Joe Bonamassa song on there. It's awesome. Like a rock blues, and we've got a lot of different directions where this could have gone. And suddenly, I was on the dance chart.
That's pretty cool. Hey, you'll take it, whatever, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, sure. And So what was your reaction, though? I mean, did you kind of think, did you look back at your life and go, here I am now, I got this song on the dance chart, it's on Billboard. Did you think, I've come a long way, and I want to go further, how did that set up your future, your goals and things like that?
Yeah, well, it's just part of my life story. Everybody's life is different, but my life story is like, wow, okay, so you're on this path, and let's just go forward. So, it was a great surprise, and it was a wonderful surprise. And I suddenly was on a tour in California. We toured like all the West Coast at all of these dance clubs, and
that's really cool. I mean, that's a different area, right? But I mean, it's cool.
Yeah,
just thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah, so far I've sang country and blues and jazz in China, and then we're on a dance chart, and it was quite a welcome surprise and a fun surprise, and I'm so very thankful for Bobby's vision, and I'm so very thankful for my team to just having that vision to see it go further, to see it, that this is the industry. There are brilliant people out there that know what to do, that have vision. And I've been very fortunate to be in the mix of these people and wonderful friends of mine as well. And they see vision, they see things and we're like, we want to take this and we want to do it this way. Right. And a lot of people resist when that is approached to them. But I have the trust and I've learned to trust people when somebody is an expert in their field and they say, we want to do this. You kind of have to sometimes say, okay, I trust you. And that's, that's a real strong component,
right,
of trusting one another. Yeah. And knowing that their vision is going to work. And it did. I'm very thankful.
Yeah. I'm sure they know what they're talking about. If they've had success in the past, you kind of go with them, you're like, well, they've done this, and this, so I'm going to listen to what they have to say. But
I'm very awesome. Proud of my team and the people I work with because they're brilliant, and I trust them, and I think that's too. If you can, that's another part of advice. If you can find a team that you trust and that has your back no matter what, and they know things that you don't know. I mean, because we all are experts somehow, and you have to say, hey, well, you're an expert at this, so right. I need to trust you on what you're saying there.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. No, I totally agree. So what's been happening with you lately? What you got going on here lately?
Oh my goodness. Well, I just finished a Christmas EP, which I'd wanted to do. It was a continuum of my first Christmas EP that I did last year in lockdown. When the pandemic came, it just kind of knocked everybody into a frenzy, but we're coming out of that, hopefully, and we are on our way back to Thailand. I've got a new EP coming out. I just did a Christmas EP, but we've got a new EP coming out in the spring, and it is kind of an ode to Thailand. I mean, I've got 6 songs on there that my friends and compadres over in Asia and my team here all working together to put together kind of this album of, not kind of, but this album of, why, you know, I've come to love the country over there, and they always are interested in what I'm doing when I'm in Nashville. So, you know, it's kind of an ode to that.
You're an international star now. So it's not, you're not limited to one area. Now you're over in other countries and they're loving your music. That's really cool, huh?
Yeah. I'm so very thankful for it and so very grateful. I mean, the one thing that I've gotten out of all of this, you know, craziness and all is that, and the travel is tough. I've got to tell you, it takes a toll sometimes, but it's so worth it because I feel so supported and, I've been able to have, like special glasses into another side of the world. And I'm so thankful for it that I get to see how other cultures are and what's going on in the world and what they're experiencing. And then I get to compare it to what we're experiencing. And, you know, and that's the thing about international travel and making friends from other sides of the world, even like in Switzerland, I have dear friends from Switzerland and just everywhere, that we'll talk about things. We'll talk about social issues, or we'll talk about, you know, what's going on in their government, or their travel problems and that sort of thing. And it bonds us as a people. And you know, I certainly, when I first started out in the music business, I didn't know that was going to be my montage or whatever, but it is. And now it's for me just to explore relationships with people around the world.
And you get a firsthand experience as opposed to hearing about it, like you said, like on TV or the media. You don't really know people until you really are there firsthand and you get a chance to socialize with people like that. It's really cool, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it started with, and I had traveled before going to China, but when you live somewhere and you immerse yourself into a community and a culture, a different culture than you've ever known, you start seeing the everyday life of people. And there's so much of it is like, we're humans and we're all alike. And there are things that we're all alike in. Right. I mean, we all love, we all hurt, we have pain. We all have joy. We all find love through family and food and that sort of thing. So when you see that and experience it and relationships, to me, that's been the most rewarding thing of my whole career, is to be able to experience life like that, to understand that there are people over in the remote parts of the world that feel the same way I feel about things, or we have a common bond, you know?
Right.
It's really great.
You're like the bridge between, you know, America and there. I mean, and you're a good representative of that. You know, I think that's really good when you're talented and you, and great voice, by the way. I haven't said that. I've been jamming, listening to your music. Very good. Great job.
Thank you so much. And I hear that you are a Steve Perry Journey fan. Somebody
told you that. Well, yes. Yeah. Well, speaking of which, today is the 44th anniversary of Steve Perry's first album with Journey called Infinity. 44 years ago today, it was released. Man.
That's incredible. I fell in love with Journey in high school, and I'm not going to divulge my age, but let me just say this. In 1981, I saw my first Journey concert, and it was like, I already loved their music, but I saw them in concert and I was just blown away. And Steve Perry has a voice.
He's the best. Yeah.
I mean, has, you know, one of those voices in millions that stand out to me. They're like, that is a great voice.
It's to me, there's nothing better. I mean, I'm just the way he sings, and it kind of hits you in the soul. It's kind of you know, it's similar to what you know what you're talking about with the blues and the soul music and things. He grew up with stuff like that too. So it was like when you got that foundation, you're gonna sing like this angel because you got all this built up within you. And I'm sure that's why you're so, you know, talented and, you know, based on what you've been listening to, when you're listening to all these different styles and things like that, man, that really shows up. And, but yeah, when you were talking about the Sony thing though, he had an album shelved with Sony back in 1988. And because they were going through a transition or something, and it was called Against the Wall. So it never got released until later on his Greatest Hits album. So he kind of, you know, y'all have that in common. He had his album was shelved. So,
well, I sing, sometimes I'll get requests to sing things, and I will sing, you know, Lights. I love that song. Oh, yeah. Lights in the City. I love that song. Sure. I sing it often. And anytime I want to be really pumped up, like before a show or I need a lot of energy, I'll always sing Ask the Lonely, because that song, man, to me is like,
that's a good one. That's a good song. I mean, as far as that, nobody gets to hear like a cover of, I mean, that's really a cool song to cover. You know, but, my favorite is Faithfully. That's my favorite. Oh. That's my favorite song ever of any song. Yeah. I just love that song.
I can understand. I think that was about the time when they came, it was 1981-82 when Faithfully came out. And, you know, here I am, a, you know, young person, and right.
You were just playing, 2 years old. You were 2 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. But, you know, when you hear and it's on the radio, like all of the time, and that is, yeah. It was kind of like our school's, you know, anthem sort of. And, you know, I can remember proms and things like that. That song would always be played. I mean, that was, you know, when you recall your high school years, there's always songs that remind you of your high school. And that definitely was one of those. And I mean, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, they were just a great band. They were a phenomenal band. I have not seen their new, I mean, I've not seen them live. I've certainly seen, you know, their song, their new journey.
Yeah.
With
Arnell, yeah.
Yeah, and he's great. He's from Philippines, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah. I have a lot of Filipino friends, and they are very musical, very, very musical, and just as a wonderful culture, a very musical culture. Gosh, they all love Steve Perry. I hear them sing a lot. But what a time, and I'm so happy I was born at that time to have that in my life. You know, do you ever wonder about that, like,
yeah,
why you were born at a certain time and the experiences you get to experience?
Sure. I think there's a reason for everything, but I personally for music, I think we grew up in the best time ever to get to hear all the greats. And then you got that within you when you're writing songs or singing songs. When you've got that within you, you've got all the best within you. And it's going to come out, and it's going to be like the coolest thing ever. And I think a lot of people are going to appreciate that fact. That's why that song that your disco song was such a hit, because I think that's part of you coming out with all that, you know, melting pot of great music, right? That's what it's all about.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we all, you know, music is such a universal language, and it transcends, you know, I can't imagine, you know, I ask people that. I said, can you imagine a life without music? Can you imagine a world without music? And, you know, I would be at such a loss. I can't even imagine what it would be like not to have that in my head, or not to be able to sing, or not to be able to hear it, mainly to hear it.
Oh, man.
And it's such a gift. And like you say, I think we were at the best time, because
I agree. But how cool though is it to sing it and perform for people, to make them happy, you know, to be on a stage and they come to hear you, and a part of you enters into their heart, and they take you with them, you know. Have you ever thought about that? I mean, that's,
yeah. Oh my gosh, thank you for saying that. Is so beautiful. And it's so beautiful for you to say that. And I'm so thrilled that when I see people that I haven't seen in a while and they'll come back to a show, and, you know, it's this, I always want to remember, because it's like we share something, you know, sure. We've shared a moment. And to me, that's what it's all about, to sing live, is to share a moment with somebody. And I think you hit it right on the head when you say, when somebody, you touch their heart, or, you know, they've touched yours, because sure. I certainly have fans that I know that they touch mine. They touch my heart because they're so nice and so warm, and, you know, they're interesting and want to hear more, or they have a story of their own that they've shared, you know, and those kinds of things. And, yeah. You know, when I see these award shows where people will say, I want to thank the fans for, you know, loving my music or whatever, that's true.
Yeah.
Because those are the people that buy your music, that really are into you, and they give a part of themselves.
That's right.
And it's just so wonderful. It really is. It's a blessing.
So what kind of gigs have you got coming up, or are you going to be playing anywhere around this area?
This area, well, actually, you know, we're in 2 weeks, we are on a flight back to Thailand. And so I'm preparing for that. And there's just a lot of paperwork and things like that because of COVID and all of that going on that we have to prepare for. But I'm going back and I'm doing a Valentine's show with one of my dear friends that I've played with around Bangkok and Koh Chang. And we're going to do a Valentine's show in Phuket, Thailand. So I'm preparing for that.
That's really cool. And not too many people can say that. I think I'll go to Thailand and sing. Where you going?
I was asked and I was honored to accept. You know, they're like, come down and do this Valentine's show with us. And I was
That's
like, okay.
Really cool. Wow.
And I'm releasing my EP in Thailand too. So I'll be there when the EP comes out. It's called To Thailand with Love. And I will be so happy. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to be over there or not, but I am going to be able to be over there while it's released. So I'm awesome. Happy to, you know, be there at that time.
Or is it going to be available like on your website or?
Yeah, it'll be available everywhere. Every platform. I mean, it's for the world, okay. But it's just a thank you to Thailand and the people that I've come in contact with and become friends with, and a thank you for them.
That sounds exciting. And Valentine's in Thailand. That's the TV special. You got a TV special.
My husband was pretty happy.
See, I was going to say, what a nice gift for both of you. Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day. You know, I mean, I'm just saying that's a sweet thing for y'all. That's really cool. Well, I appreciate you talking about your music. I think everybody's going to enjoy this. I think you summarized this podcast and this channel. It's called Real Music. And to me, real music is any music that touches your soul and makes you change for the better. And I think you've done that. And I think everybody's going to enjoy it.
Gosh, thank you so much. And thank you for having a podcast such as this, because I'm with you on that. I believe that, you know, music is so important, and real music, especially if it comes from the heart and it goes back into the heart, that's where the music is.
Right.
You know, that's where it should, that's where it stays. And if you can touch that, then you've done something.
Right.
And for you to do this is just a great thing to talk about. Because there is a real story in life, and every story is different, as you know, as you interview all of these people, that every story is just a little bit different.
Right.
And so thank you, Gary.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, and I'm you know, I've always enjoy these interviews, but I really appreciate you talking, and it's exciting that my mind is going to these, you know, I've never been to Thailand, but I've been to Oklahoma. No, that's a song. I've never been to Spain, but I've been to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I've never been to Thailand, but I've been to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
No, but
is it three dog nine?
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Very good.
Yeah. And you know what? I think was it May Axton or Hoyt Axton wrote that song? That,
very
was,
good. He sure did. His mom wrote Heartbreak Hotel with Elvis.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And when you start getting to the stories of who wrote what, and
I know you probably do the same thing too, but I've always been interested in song. You know, I've been writing songs since I was little, but I always pay attention to the songwriters. You know, I always look at the label. That's why I like to have a CD or an album instead of downloads, because you get to see who wrote the song on the album. But you don't get that with a download, right?
No, you don't. And I feel like I'm so glad that you brought that up, because experiencing Nashville the way I did and experiencing the songwriting community and how important it is and how vital it is for music, I hate to see it go away. I hate to see downloads not give credit where credit is due, you know, because there's so much that goes into it, like the art of the song and the genesis of the song and how it's written and how somebody sings it and the musicians they used on it. Right. And when you listen to all those George Jones and Tammy Wynette stories and Billy Sherrill stories of how he took them in the studio and the songs and how they, you know, it's just incredible. Yeah. Incredible.
Awesome. You're talking about George Jones, and of course, you know, you're friends with Bobby Braddock. I know a guy named Earl Montgomery. I've met Earl Montgomery, the other George Jones songwriter from back in the day.
Wow.
So how cool is that? But yeah, I talked to him about songwriting, and he's got a lot to say about that. Yeah, you need to listen to these guys from the old school songwriters. I think they might know a thing or two, right?
Absolutely. That's so wonderful. Yeah. And you learn a lot because they are storytellers.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you are a storyteller. You're a songwriter. You're telling a story about, you know, a moment in your life and just the stories that have come out, the beautiful stories, whether they are a part of the imagination or part of something real life that happened to them, you know, are just, it's pretty profound. When you go down that rabbit hole and you realize that this talent is coming from a wordsmith, I mean, it's a blessing.
Yeah, for real. To me, it's like painting a picture with words. Is what I like to do is to make the person visualize whatever, you know, they're reading and put them there in the middle of it, you know, in like a 3D type thing. But I think that's what it's all about.
And, you know, the great thing about wonderful thing about songwriters, too, is I put it in perspective of this way. They're telling a story. You're telling a story in 3 minutes.
That's right.
Essentially.
Yeah.
A whole story in 3 minutes. And that, how much that would take, how much talent that takes to put the whole story out in 3 minutes. So, yeah.
And it's
incredible.
Do you ever do this, though? The song is so good. You have to hit replay because it's too short. You're like, I got to hear that again. That's just too good of a song. I think your song is like that, the Sugar Shack song. People need to go play that song over and over again and dance. I want to see people dance. But,
thank you.
But that's a really good song, really. Honestly, that's a really good song.
Thank you.
But I appreciate you talking to me. And send photos. Post them, of course. You're going to post them, I'm sure, on your social media of Thailand and Valentine's and all that good stuff. And let us know what happens over there.
I certainly will. My website's tammymusic.com and TAMI. And of course I'm on all social media platforms and all music platforms, and I'd love you guys to check it out. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Gary. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll see you. Maybe in the future, I'll see you somewhere. Maybe in Thailand. You never know.
I hope so. Well, I hope so. Wherever it may be.
Wherever it may be. All right. Well, you have a good night, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you, Gary.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, everybody, to another episode. If you've enjoyed this podcast, I hope you have. And if you'd like to help out, you can go over to the support button. There's a button at the bottom of the page. Whenever you click on it, you can give any amount of money that you feel like. And I'd appreciate it so much. Whatever you'd like to give, that is fine with me. I'd like to thank all the ones that have been given. It means so much to me. It's helped me out and helped me to continue this podcast. So thanks so much. And until next time, everybody, this is Gary Stuckey saying, always keep the music real.